not see flying saucers. All right, where do we even begin with a topic like this? I mean, it's the kind of thing you'd expect to find in a pulpy sci-fi paperback, not, like serious historical archives.
Well, that's the thing about this topic. It's a weird mix. You've got these outlandish claims, conspiracy theories, bits of actual history, and then a whole lot of speculation.
A real mixed bag. So let's try to unpack it, shall we? You've sent us a ton of material on this. What's the gist? What are we dealing with here?
It's basically a deep dive into the question: did Nazi Germany actually try to build flying saucers during World War II? And if so, just how far did they get?
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive, to figure out if there's any truth to these stories.
Exactly. We're going to dig into the historical context, look at the key players, and see if we can separate fact from fiction.
Sounds like a plan. So where do we even begin with a story like this?
Well, to understand how this whole Nazi flying saucer idea took off, we need to go back to the early 1950s.
Okay, so picture this. It's the aftermath of World War II.
The world is still reeling from the conflict. The Cold War is heating up. There's a sense of paranoia, of uncertainty about the future, and people are looking for answers.
I can imagine. In a world that suddenly feels a lot more unstable, you start to see shadows everywhere.
Precisely. And it's in this climate of fear and suspicion that we see the first whispers of Nazi secret weapons programs, rumors of advanced technology that the Nazis were developing that could threaten the world.
And this is where the flying saucers come in.
In a way, yes. You see, alongside these rumors of secret weapons, people were also reporting strange sightings in the sky, things they couldn't explain.
UFOs.
Exactly. Unidentified flying objects. And some people started to connect these sightings back to Nazi Germany.
So it's like a perfect storm. Post-war anxiety, Cold War paranoia, and then boom, UFOs. People are primed to believe just about anything.
It was the perfect breeding ground for conspiracy theories. And one of the first figures to really push this Nazi flying saucer narrative was a guy named Giuseppe Belluso.
Okay, and who was this Belluso guy? Some conspiracy theorist in his basement with a tinfoil hat.
Not at all. Belluso was a highly respected Italian scientist and engineer, a former minister in Mussolini's government.
Okay, so not some random crank.
No, Belluso had serious credentials. But here's where it gets weird. In 1950, he gives an interview where he claims to have seen designs for disc-shaped aircraft.
Hold on, he's claiming he saw actual Nazi blueprints for flying saucers.
That's exactly what he said. And he even claimed that these designs were feasible, that such a craft could be built.
Wow. So what happened? Did anybody take him seriously?
Well, it definitely caused a stir. The media ate it up. And Belluso's claims really helped to fuel public fascination with the idea of Nazi flying saucers.
I can only imagine the headlines. Respected scientist claims Nazis built flying saucers. It practically writes itself.
It was a sensation. And as if that wasn't enough, around the same time, another story starts circulating. This one about a German physicist named Walter Hess.
Okay, Walter Hess. This is already sounding more and more like a spy thriller. Who was this Hess character, and what was his story?
Well, if you believe the accounts, Hess was attached to a top-secret Nazi program working on, you guessed it, flying saucers.
Of course, had to be.
This supposed program was supposedly based in a secret underground facility. And they were experimenting with all sorts of advanced technologies, including things like anti-gravity propulsion.
Anti-gravity? Come on, that's straight out of science fiction.
I know, right? But those were the kind of stories that were making the rounds. And according to these accounts, as the war was coming to an end, Hesse supposedly fled Germany with his research.
Okay, so where'd he go? South America, Argentina? That seems to be where all the ex-Nazis ended up.
Even more intriguing, the story claims he ends up in the Soviet Union.
The Soviets. Whoa. Okay, so now we're not just talking about some rogue scientists. We're talking about potential Cold War espionage, secret Nazi technology falling into the hands of the Soviets.
Exactly. And that just added another layer of paranoia to the whole thing.
People must have been freaking out. I mean, we're talking about a world that had just witnessed the atomic bomb, the idea that the Nazis might have had even more terrifying technology up their sleeves.
It's the stuff of nightmares. And those fears, those anxieties, they created fertile ground for even wilder claims to take root.
So, where do we go from here? This is just the beginning, isn't it?
Oh, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yay.
Because next we're going to talk about perhaps the most famous name associated with Nazi flying saucers, a man who claimed to have not just seen designs, but to have actually built and flown one of these incredible machines.
And who would that be?
That would be Rudolf Schriever.
Rudolf Schriever. All right, let's talk about this guy. Who was he and what exactly was he claiming?
Well, unlike some of the other figures we've discussed, Schriever was a real person. We have documented evidence that he served in the German military during World War II.
Okay, so not just a figment of someone's imagination. We've got an actual name and a service record. What else?
He was a pilot. And according to some records, he was listed as a chief pilot for an aircraft manufacturer based in Prague.
Prague, as in Czechoslovakia. What was a German aircraft manufacturer doing in Prague during the war?
Well, that's the thing about Prague during that time. It was a hub for a lot of German industrial activity, including some of their more sensitive research and development programs.
Okay, so potentially a place where secret weapons projects might have been hidden away.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why Schriever's story gained so much traction, is because there's this kernel of plausibility there. He's not just some nobody making wild claims. He's a pilot with ties to the German military-industrial complex. And he's operating in a location that was known for its secrecy.
Okay, I'm hooked. So what about the flying saucer? What did Schriever actually claim to have built?
He called it the Flugkreisel, which roughly translated means flying gyro.
Flying gyro. It even sounds kind of science fiction-y, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? And Schriever's descriptions of this Flugkreisel, they were pretty out there. He claimed that it was a circular aircraft about 45 feet in diameter.
Okay, so picture a disc shape, like a classic flying saucer from the movie.
Right. And he claimed that this disc was powered by a combination of conventional jet engines and this kind of rotating ring of blades.
So like a helicopter with a rotor.
Similar concept, but on a much larger scale.
Yeah.
And Schriever claimed that this rotating ring of blades was what provided the lift for the Flugkreisel, allowing it to take off vertically and hover in place.
I'm picturing those sketches he made. They're pretty rough, weren't they? More like doodles than technical drawings.
Yeah, they were very basic, almost cartoonish in a way. And that lack of detailed technical documentation, that's one of the biggest holes in Schriever's story.
Meaning there's no real proof that any of this was actually built or even could be built.
Exactly. We have Schriever's word and these rudimentary sketches, but no blueprints, no engineering schematics, no evidence of any kind that he actually possessed the knowledge or the resources to pull something like this off.
But he was claiming some pretty incredible capabilities for this thing, right? Like insane speeds and maneuverability.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't shy about making outlandish claims. He said this thing could reach speeds of over 4,000 miles per hour.
4,000? I mean, that's faster than the speed of sound. Multiple times the speed of sound.
Which was unheard of at the time. This is the 1940s, keep in mind.
So what you're saying is, even if he had managed to get something off the ground, it probably would have fallen apart as soon as it hit a certain speed?
It's highly likely, yes.
Yeah.
The technology just wasn't there yet.
It all sounds a bit too good to be true, doesn't it? A little too science fiction to be believable.
It does. But there's another wrinkle to this story, one that makes it even more intriguing.
Oh, and what's that?
Schriever claimed that he offered to build a prototype of his Flugkreisel for the U.S. military after the war.
Wait, seriously? He tried to sell them on Nazi flying saucer technology. What did they say?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. Because according to Schriever, the U.S. military turned him down.
They turned him down? Why would they do that? I mean, if there was even a remote chance that he could deliver on his promises, wouldn't they have jumped at the opportunity?
You would think so, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the midst of the Cold War, with the Soviets breathing down their necks. But for whatever reason, the U.S. military didn't bite.
So we've got a documented Nazi pilot, a secret weapons facility in Prague, claims of a groundbreaking flying machine, and a story about the U.S. military passing on the opportunity to get their hands on it.
It's a lot to process, isn't it? And it really gets to the heart of what makes these Nazi flying saucer stories so enduring.
Because it's got all the elements of a great conspiracy theory.
It's a story that's almost designed to make you ask questions, to make you wonder if there's more to it than meets the eye.
So is there? Is there more to the story? Was Schriever telling the truth? Or was he, as you said, just a really good storyteller?
Well, to answer that, we need to step back and look at the bigger picture.
It's a wild story, I'll give him that. But I guess the big question is, was Schriever telling the truth? Or was he delusional? Or maybe even trying to pull a fast one?
It's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And honestly, there's no easy answer. I mean, we've got these tantalizing hints, these threads of a story that could be absolutely huge. But then when you try to tug on those threads, they kind of unravel.
Like you said, no blueprints, no credible witnesses, no physical evidence of any kind.
Exactly. And that's always the challenge with these kinds of stories. We're relying on anecdotal evidence, on hearsay, on accounts that have been filtered through multiple layers of interpretation.
And in a world where information travels at the speed of light, it's easy for those stories to get distorted, exaggerated.
Absolutely. So what are we left with? I think on the one hand, it's important to acknowledge that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
And in Schriever's case, that evidence is just not there.
Right. But on the other hand, I think there's also something to be said for the power of a good story.
Even if it turns out to be just that, a story.
Exactly. Because stories like this, they capture our imaginations. They make us ask questions, explore possibilities, consider alternative versions of history.
And isn't that part of what makes this whole topic so fascinating?
Absolutely. It's the mystery, the intrigue, the possibility that maybe, just maybe, there's something more to these stories than we know.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to ponder. It seems like with every answer, we uncover even more questions.
That's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
So where do we go from here? What's the takeaway for our listener?
I think the biggest takeaway is the importance of critical thinking. We have to be willing to question what we hear, to dig deeper, to look for evidence.
To not just accept something at face value, no matter how exciting or intriguing it might seem.
Exactly. And to remember that history is full of mysteries, full of stories that may never be fully explained. But that doesn't mean we should stop searching for answers.
And who knows? Maybe someday we'll uncover the truth behind the legend of Rudolf Schriever and his incredible flying machine. Until then, the mystery remains. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.